All right. Thank you, guys. Hey, for those I haven't met, my name is Myers Raymer, and I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic and a little dope fiend. And it feels so good to be able to talk about dope. I got to tell you, it's so frustrating sometimes in the States. I'm a member of a couple of different fellowships, and it's dope played a big old part in my stuff. If Chris hadn't introduced me to all the stuff that made me go faster, I don't know if I'd ever gotten here. But it took me about 6 months to crash and burn when he brought me this stuff, and it was I will always be grateful for that. It saved a lot of time. My home group is a primary purpose group in Dallas, Texas. It's a bunch of big old lathered up book folks. And we got a couple of book studies a week. I love studies. I love the fact that we can study the text and that we can get some solution, which is pretty important. I love this meeting. I love this format because of all of the hope in those early readings. In the States, everybody seems to want to read how it works for the 10 millionth time, and nobody listens to it. And it just, we don't in our group, but most groups do. And that's all. And I'm going, you know, let me ask you, how many of y'all have ever sat in a meeting and closed your eyes and just listened to what you're hearing and then put yourself in the place of a new person that's walked in that room? It's phenomenal how ineffective a lot of our meetings are because we want to read off some weird deal. There was more hope and more direction and more codifying cool stuff in that early stuff that you just read. I picture myself brand new and I go, holy cow, I've got a head full of great direction based on what we just read. I don't have to wait for somebody to share something 6 months from now that I might be able to use. I've got a lot of good stuff to start out on. And I just love that. It's been a crazy couple of weeks in Zoom land. I remember somebody saying a long time ago, they said, Myers, you get to travel a lot in AA stuff. And I went, yeah, I do. And he said, well, it must be cool getting to sit in AA meetings all over the world. And I went, well, no, it's not. It's kind of uncomfortable sometimes because not every meeting is the same. And this lady walked in and kind of insinuated herself into the conversation. And she said, that's just bull crap. You know that every meetings are the same all over this world. And I'm going, okay. Tell me where you've been other than Dallas. Well, I don't get to travel very much, but I know that. And I'm just going like, come on, guys, the world is full of meetings that are so off the chain weird in terms of what they're talking about that you just kind of go like, oh my gosh, do I love them? Yes. Would I always be willing to help? You bet. But I say any of this to let you know how proud I am and excited I am to be here in this room with you rascals. It's just I love solution-based stuff that quits playing these stupid games and just cuts to the chase. We have a disease that gets progressively worse. Statistically, most of us should be dead or locked up, but we found a solution. And I want to talk about that stuff. That's always a funner thing to do. In the short time we have, I don't want to get into a bunch of story stuff, but I need to talk just a little bit about some story because it affects everything else that comes, everything that followed. Like Chris took me, my twin took me to my first AA meeting in January of 88. And that's my sobriety date. I was going to NA and AA at the same time in Dallas. And the NA got so weird that I finally, after about 8 months, I stopped going. And there was a saying in Dallas, I haven't heard it in a long time, but there was a saying when I first sobered up, if you want to get loaded or laid, go to NA. And it was, that's not nice. I know that, but it was kind of a crazy thing. I mean, the girls were dressed like special And if you wanted to buy dope, you could buy dope in the meeting. And it was just like a real uncomfortable place to be if you'd been struggling with this stuff. And so I ended up just landing in AA. And I landed in a group of the nicest people in the universe, but they didn't know anything about the big book. Nobody carried big books. We had sponsors in name only. I never worked the steps. I'm the kind of like the poster boy of middle of the road solution. If you said, you know, the little aphorisms on the wall, think, just don't drink this, you know, that kind of stuff. I knew all of that. But I couldn't tell you. At 7 years clear of booze and methamphetamines, I could not tell you who the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous were. I'd heard of Bill, but I didn't really know how he, you know, worked into the deal. All this just to say, guys, I'm just this middle of the road guy trying to stay sober one stupid day at a time. And I'm okay around the sobriety part. I'm managing to do that. The problem with this stuff is that about 3 years into the gig, I still haven't worked the steps. I still haven't had any experience with the work itself. I'm just showing up at a bunch of meetings. But I gotta tell you, it can get really weird when your head is wrapped around the intellectual idea that my problem was methamphetamines and Canadian whiskey, and if I stop doing that, I'll be okay. So if you're intellectually attached to that, what do you do when you start falling apart in AA? I mean, I'm simply falling apart. My wife can't stand me. My kids are terrified of me. I'm just a knucklehead. I don't know. Work is my employees. I've got a bindery. I'm a bookbinder by trade, and my employees are terrified of me because they don't know who's coming in every day. And nor do I. I could be really, really spiritual, leaving a meeting, and then by the time I get home, I could be the Marquis de Sade. I mean, I could be just a horrible guy. And it's my family's tired of it. I mean, they were just ready for something different. I'm sharing it in meetings. All we have is these discussion, 32 meetings a week in that group, 32 meetings a week. And all we're doing is talking about our cats and our shopping experiences and, you know, just nice folks. But 5 years sober, quote unquote sober. I'm spending tons of money I don't have. I'm buying stuff I don't need. I'm looking at crazy crap I shouldn't be looking at. It's hard to explain. Guys, I'm restless, irritable, and discontent all the time, but I haven't been able to connect it up what the problem is. I'm buying into the old idea that if I'm struggling, I just need to go to some more meetings. So I'm going to 6 meetings a week, and I'm getting worse. Anxiety, I've got some anxiety issues that I'm dealing with, and I finally get some meds to take care of that stuff, and then they go away, and then the depression comes back. And I'm dealing with this daily depression that's so severe, I can't function. I can't work, which is a problem because my wife is my business partner in this shop, and I can't go to work. I'm almost 7 years sober. Every day I get up suicidal. Now I just, guys, all those years out there doing the crazy stuff I was doing, I never one time, not once did I ever think about killing myself. And here I am 7 years clear of the booze and the dope, and it's all I can think of. It just got pretty uncomfortable, guys. I finally, got real scared one night. I almost drank. It was a kind of a weird story, but anyway, I almost drank and it scared me really bad. And I called Chris, the evil twin, who's now moved to the hill country. And, he's in Central Texas where I am right now. I'm at work right now. And he asked me, he said, "Mars, I thought you were going to call that old guy named Cliff and find you another group." And apparently we'd had this conversation before, and I never called the guy. And Chris said, "You need to call him." And I said, "Okay, I will." And a couple of days later, Chris called me back and said, "What'd you think of this guy?" And I said, I didn't call him. And Chris just hung up on me. And I called him back and I said, "What's that about?" And he said, "I don't know what else to do. You're in a horrible place. And I'm scared for you. But I don't know anything else that I can offer you. This is not a program that you can do by yourself. And you've convinced yourself that you can." And I just went, "Yeah, okay." And so I called this old guy and I'll skip over a bunch of stuff. He was real direct with me and he helped me see the things that I needed to see. Clifford was, he passed away 3 or 4 years ago, and Clifford was sponsored by Joe McQuaney of Joe and Charlie. And so you can tell where the big book stuff is getting ready to slide into the middle of this. And so it's kind of a weird situation. I'm a total, complete big book idiot on one hand, and now I'm in a room full of folks that have 2 book studies a week, and that's all they're doing is studying the text. They don't care. They're not listening to anything I'm saying in terms of my day. They didn't give a fuzzy rat's rear what my day was like, which was real offensive to me for a bit. I'm just telling you, I want to share how I'm feeling. They said, "We don't care how you feel. What we care about is if you can get healthy enough to go help somebody." And I went, okay, whatever. I'm just real flippant with them and real, but they tolerated me and sort of just kind of hugged on me a little bit. And I came back and decided that I would stay until I got smart enough to go back to my original home group. And I never went back. I just fell in love with those folks and what it was that we were doing. Over on page 17 in the book, there's this little place called where Bill Wilson starts talking about a common solution. Guys, I spent 7 years treating Alcoholics Anonymous and treating 12-step programs in general like they were some kind of cafeteria where I could walk in, take a little of this, take a little of that, ignore that, don't do that, whatever. I mean, have y'all ever done that? I don't know if in Great Britain, if they have those little lampshade things on the wall that have the steps and stuff like this. And I'd sit there and read those things. I'm not going to read a book. And so I just going to read them off the wall. And I'd go, "Nah, I'm not going to. Yeah, I do that. Yeah, I do that. Yeah, not that." And I just, it was crazy. And then I would wonder why it is that I made no progress. Why is it that I'm not getting any better? And it wasn't until those folks held me accountable and shortened that whole process. I went from people talking about taking 8 hours to do an inventory, to do a fifth step, to listen to a fifth step. I went from there to guys going, come on, let's do this. And we'll do this in an hour, maybe an hour and a half. And I'm going, there's no way. But you can. And the book's clear about what part of next we launched out on a course of vigorous action do we not understand? And I knew I was sitting in rooms with people that had been 8 or 9 months after they did the third step and they still haven't done any inventory yet. And we were all okay with it. We co-signed it. It was okay. The book was much more direct and much more direct. They just wanted us to do what they asked us to do on this thing. This common solution, guys, the way I carry the message and the way Ash carries the message or way Ross carries it, that we're all going to carry it a little different. We have different temperaments. We have different little spirits about us. It's kind of a cool thing like that. But the basic message that we're carrying about recovery should be really, really close to the same thing. This is the reason why it gets so weird sometimes when I sit in meetings all over the world now with the Zoom stuff like that, and I'm caught completely off guard with how many folks don't get this, don't understand what it is that we're trying to do. It's amazing how many emails I get from folks all over who will go, "Myers, I never realized that we could use the big book in sponsorship." What'd you think the book was for? Just to set a coffee cup on? I mean, there really? And it's surprising. If it happened once or twice, I'd just blow it off and just say that. But it's happened dozens and dozens and dozens of times where I would initiate conversation with folks that contacted me, and we'd be talking, and we would never get past the meeting as the centerpiece of our program. Guys, there's nowhere in our basic text ever in our basic text that it talks about our meeting being the center of our program. The center of our program is a deepening relationship with our Creator and the ability to move from where we are as train wrecks over here to somebody over here that's getting closer and closer to God is what the steps are all about. These spiritual principles change everything about who we are and what we are. There was a guy in Houston here in Texas that sent me a document the other day from their intergroup office in Houston. And it was fascinating to me. I hadn't had a current one in about 15 years. I used to have one from Dallas and one from Austin. This one was from Houston, Texas. I skipped back to their data in 2019. 2019, before the cornhole virus hit, before any of that stuff happened like that, we got this they were measuring how many, counting how many desire chips were sold in Houston or Harris County. Guys, listen, so stick with me for 2 seconds. It doesn't take long, and I'm not going to bore you with a bunch of facts and figures. But I want you to understand one thing, that the chip sales for 1 month chips, for desire chips in Harris County were 16,000. I'm going to just round it to there. It's 16,000 desire chips in that year. 1 month chips was 6,000. I'm rounding them up a little bit and down a little bit, but you're talking about 10,000 people. You had 16,000 people that picked up a desire chip in a meeting. They walked up, they said, yes, this is me. They went through all of that. It's a tough walk to make. Most of us remember what it's like to walk up to a front of a room in the beginning like that. And so we walk up there like this, 16,000 people walked up, were handed a desire chip. And 1 month chips, there were only 6,000 people that picked up 1 month chips. Guys, we got to count for 10,000 people that aren't there, that were gone. Does that make anybody feel weird but me? I mean, it made me sit back and go, what the hell? Where did these people go? I spent a lot of time thinking about it, y'all. And what I think is happening more than ever is that, these were in-face meetings, person to person. I think that what happened was is that we were so busy looking and hoping that the fellowship alone would hold people in the room that maybe we lose people that way, that maybe if we were a little more aggressive at trying to help them understand the nature of our disease and then the nature of what that solution looks like. Y'all ever stop and think about how weird it is to walk into a room as a busted up little dope fiend and you obviously need help, and we're going to ask you to walk towards a spiritual solution to your problem, but you don't know what that means. And we have so many people in the room that won't tell you. They'll just sit there, love on you a little bit, tell you it's going to be okay, just keep coming back, whatever. And if you just hang around long enough, you'll hear what you need to hear. Guys, listen to me. I'm not trying to get angry with anybody, but I was there for 7 years and didn't hear the truth. For 7 years, I sat in a room with the nicest people in the world and never heard what I needed to hear about a life-saving program that would change everything about my life, that would change how I treated my family, that would change how I treated everybody in my life. Don Pritz, one of the coolest old dudes, man, I wish he was still alive. He had passed away, I'm going to guess, 7 or 8 years ago. Don sobered up in the federal penitentiary system. He was a dope fiend from hell, and he was one of the funniest guys. I traveled with him some in AA land, and he was just a piece of work. In the early 70s and then later in the 70s, he used to do a bunch of AA talks, and in those talks, there was something that he said that always caught me off guard. He said, my concern, now remember, this is in like 1974, 75, my concern is that we have stopped talking about recovery and settled on sobriety. It just kind of blows me away. I mean, this is like, way back there, he was trying to help us understand that there was more than just staying sober one day at a time. All you need to do to understand this in a bigger picture is to go back and just read some pieces. Go back and read the area of the book between the ABCs and the third step prayer. There's 2.5 pages there that start talking about this stage character, and they paint this picture of this cat, and they introduce us to this weird, totally weird idea that selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problem, which is totally weird if you've not been taught that. Wait a minute, selfishness is a problem? I'm not selfish. Why? I just ask my wife. She'll tell you what a giving guy I am. I just didn't realize. They describe this stage character. They talk about the actor that wants to run the whole show. Guys, y'all, go back and read those 2.5 pages, and then later on, 2 or 3 hours later, read it again. And then start to ask yourself the question, am I real? Am I that guy? Am I authentic? Or am I a stage character? Because if you ask me, I'll tell you no. I'll tell you I'm okay. But the reality is, stop and think about what you're like in a meeting. Here I am. I'll look at my own stuff. I'm a spiritual giant sitting in a meeting. And then I walk out, get in my truck. I start listening to some crazy ass music. I start driving down the road. I'm flipping people off. I'm driving like an idiot. I go home. I'm ugly to my family. I'm short tempered. I'm just like, come on. How many of us have known people in these rooms that we loved and respected, and then later found out that they were cheating on their wives? Guys, we see this all the time. You know, it's just like, that's a classic stage character that I'm talking about. And our rooms are full of them. And no, I'm not talking from some spiritual mountaintop judging people. I lived that nightmare for years and years and years. I'm the stage character. And what I needed to do was figure out a way to get clear of that. And that's what these principles were about, how to get clear. I wanted to be more than anything. I wanted to be authentic. When I finally realized that how off the kilter I was, how weird I was, I wanted it to change, which is huge. This is why we do this stuff. Go read the promises. Go read any of the promises in the big book like this, and then ask yourself the question: have these promises manifested in my life or not? Come on, I want to read a little piece real quick, guys, and then I'll wrap this up and we can get on. Over on page 75, halfway down the page, there's a little piece right there that says, we can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel that we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Come on, y'all. Either Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob in the first 100 were totally full of crap, and they were just making this stuff up to sell books, or what if they really meant it? What if they truly meant that as a result of doing this work, we could have an experience that was so profound that we could walk hand in hand with the spirit of the universe? Come on, guys, that's some heady stuff, isn't it? That's some stuff that makes you kind of go, wow. Like in the words of Mark Houston, I smell more. There's more to this stuff than most of us take. And it's just like, we've been given this amazing chance to change lives. We've been given this chance to step in, and regardless of what our original genesis was, where we came from, most of us are just train wrecks. And we get to go from where we were to a place to where we could affect change in somebody else's life. Stop and think about this sometime when you're just sitting in quiet time and just thinking about this thing. How did a guy like me who came to the table with no skills, with no ability whatsoever, get to be in a situation where I could alter somebody's life and in some cases save that life. Now that's some heady stuff. That's some crazy stuff. Joe McQueenie told me years ago, he said, Myers, I got to tell you, you keep trying to make this an intellectual thing and it's not. There's nothing intellectual about this stuff. What you need to pay attention to is two things, and I'm going to make it real simple. And I said, oh, please do. And he said, here's what it is. I want you every day to consider a couple of things. One, how much time are you spending with God today? Is my prayer hit or miss? Or can I really genuinely sit down and move towards my Creator? And the second thing is, how much time did you spend with God's kids today? Guys, I sponsored a whole lot of men over the years that have never, ever, ever lifted a finger to help anybody that didn't serve that inside for them. I mean, they were trying to do it for them. I'll get that guy a cup of coffee. And then he walks around with his chest out, making sure that everybody in the room sees him buying a cup of coffee for some little guy right in off the street. Well, that's not what we're talking about. The book was clear. Work and self-sacrifice for others. Work and self-sacrifice for others. When you look over there in the phone call and you know you've got you a nut job on the other end of that line, pick up the phone. Pick up the phone. And I'm not. Work and self-sacrifice. You find yourself in a position where you can spend time with God every day and then pray that God will bring some opportunities into your life every day where you can be of service. And I promise you, your life will transform. You will get up in the morning and you'll sit there on the edge of the bed and you'll scratch your beard. Some of you don't have beards. Mia, you look pretty clean shaven. I'm going to say, okay. But you can sit there and scratch and look out the window and realize that there is a purpose, that there is a reason to be doing what we're doing. The decision of whether or not we live transformed lives is always on our side. It's our decision to make. We're given what we need to have to do what we need to do if we'll just make the decision to do it. Those disciplines of 10, 11, and 12 are as huge as they can be. Practice those and life changes. Guys, that's all I got. We'll visit about some other stuff. Thank y'all.